As the Saints prepared to go west, one of the ways that they found to structure the wagon train companies was by using plural marriage. In fact, in Nauvoo, prior to them leaving for the Great Basin, the practice of plural marriage actually exploded, being used as a way to organize the different wagon trains into camps or tribes. Join us today on the fascinating discussion about Brigham Young's way of organizing and finding a way to take care of one another, especially the poor and the needy across the plains. Good discussion. Thanks for being here. And welcome to another Monday morning Book of Mormon class with Kevin Hinckley. Recorded live, we dive deeply and deliberately into this inspired scripture. How far we get in one class depends a lot on the material and the doctrines left for us by ancient prophets. A single chapter may occupy one class or many. Of course, opinions expressed by the teacher or the class members do not constitute official church doctrines. Join us in this adventure and discover the hidden treasures found within his pages. And now, on to the class. All right. With that, let's go ahead and get started. Now, I have a bit of a confession to make. I thought I knew my church history. And it's been a number of years, it's been a few years since we taught Doctrine and Covenants, but with this class, we continue to push into church history we wouldn't normally cover in Doctrine and Covenants. So that means pushing into documents that haven't been available for that long, just a number of few years. So you're giving me a chance to wade through some things that a lot of things I've never seen before. Not because it wasn't there, but they've just been slowly been made more and more available. So I know I keep saying to you, I'm going to tell you some stuff you haven't heard before. Yeah, but I'm going to tell you some stuff I didn't know, I had never heard before. And the more we dig, and if we continue this process through, especially next semester, we're going to continue to kind of push back because there are just more and more documents. And one of the couple of reasons for that, there have been records like the Council of 50 that's only been released just in the last few years. There are a team of professional historians that are digging through journals and documents and things we didn't have and doing it with an incredible amount of precision. So that said, I'm going to give so I have a bonus piece of information that I came up with. Come in, Tammy. And it's this. So you get bonus trivia. In the Council of 50 minutes, after the death of the prophet Joseph Smith, they're discussing an awful lot of things, and you just see them kind of doing a just kind of working out among themselves how are we going to move forward without Joseph. And one of the things W.W. Phelps, who of course was a prolific hymn writer and poet, he's going to write he wrote a poem while the prophet was still alive called Vlade Mecum, meaning come to me. And then after the prophet died, he does an interesting thing. He writes a poem in response to his own poem. Vlade Mecum actually is a long poem, and it actually is a retelling of all of section 76. If you look that up, it's just an amazing kind of thing. But this
That's
is
in
written,
Latin.
the whole thing isn't in Latin, just his
Just the title.
just the title. So this he writes as if Joseph is in the spirit world, responding to him and to the saints. And he actually reads it in the Council of 50 meeting.
And then it will be in kind of late 1844. And then it'll be recorded in Times and Seasons in January of 1845. Okay. And I wanted to just share two stanzas with you from this Come to Me, because I read it and just kind of, it surprised me. It really did. So he says, "Come to me. Here Adam and Eve at the head of a multitude quickened and raised from the dead. Here's the knowledge that is or will be in the general assembly of worlds. Come to me." In other words, he's talking to saints. And then he says this, "Come to me. Here's the mystery that man hath not seen." What's the mystery? Here's our Father in heaven and Mother, the Queen. Here are worlds that have been and worlds yet to be. Here's eternity, endless. Amen. Come to me. Now, generally, when we start talking about a heavenly mother, and we're going far back, where do we first describe that to? Eliza R. Snow, who recorded that, and it was published in Times and Seasons in October 1845. This is 9 months before. And knowledge that is available, especially to the Council of 50, prior to that, fall of 1844. That was a shock to me.
So what are the theories as to where he does?
That's the thing. You can't find. In fact, I even went back to the funny thing is, when you go to the church essay on Mother in Heaven, there's one line that says, "Other brethren had taught," and then there's just an asterisk on it. And it takes you back to here. And then there's a larger discussion about Eliza R. Snow and Oh My Father and all of that. So the church is acknowledging that's here, but they don't have anything before that. So even the researchers aren't finding anything other than the fact that Joseph apparently was teaching this, and that it.
When did women start receiving the endowment and being married? In the temple for time and eternity.
Sure. 1842 is when the Council of the Anointed,
wouldn't you kind of have to be an idiot not to understand that possibility after that happened?
Absolutely. And you start wondering if in one of those discussions with that Council of the Anointed, if Joseph was explaining to them the concept that there's a mother in heaven. But we don't have it. It's not written. They didn't keep notes, the Council of the Anointed, but we do have notes coming from the Council of 50 giving us this information. So it gives you an idea that far more people were aware of the doctrine, but it just hadn't been recorded yet. He was. Yeah, in fact, he became the head of the Council of 50.
I just found out this past week, I can't remember where Cindy and I were. Brigham Young dissolved the Relief Society clear until 1868.
He did.
So I was just wondering what his view of the role of woman was.
Tell you what. You hang on to that. Because in about 30 minutes, you're going to go, "Really?" And you're going to see exactly how he saw that. Okay? You're just premature. I like how your thinking is going here. Yeah, because it's good. It's just not maybe what you expected. But apparently, they really had an understanding that, and this is how the heavens operate. It operates with a Father in heaven and a Queen. Okay? All right. That surprised anybody that it was really W.W. Phelps that's bringing it to the world? Sure, it was a shock. It was a shock to me.
There's a difference between putting out your perspective saying this is doctrine.
Yeah, here's the mystery. No man that no man has seen. We have this is the world's not known.
Well, Eliza Snow put it out as a theory.
Yeah.
This makes reasons there that we don't have.
That's right. Theory. Yeah.
So
but
it wasn't she wasn't saying this we believe.
Necessarily. Not necessarily, but 9 months earlier they were. That's the funny part.
Mother is singular, not plural.
That's true. And it will meant. Hold on to this, guys.
But in a polygamous family, if you're a child,
you're going
you
in the you're going in the right direction here. That's what I say.
No matter how many wives there are, you're still
okay.
Got one mother.
All right, hold the wagons. literally hold the wagons, because this is a teaser of what's coming. Okay, so let's keep rolling here. So. And I'm not going. Obviously, we're not going to go through every bit of history. There's so much great history here, but I want to go through what I think are some of the doctrinal developments that are unfolding at this moment with Joseph dead and Brigham Young having to roll forward. So some major decisions are going on. So now we get to the winter of 1845. Remember, they leave prematurely in 1846, and people are trying to get ready to go, and they go pouring out of Nauvoo in, first of all, the first few weeks of February. They're trying to finish the temple. They're trying to get packed. They're trying to go. But it's winter. They were planning on leaving in the spring around May, but governor is lying to them that the militias might try and stop them. So we got to get out sooner. And so prematurely, everybody does that, and then it heads them right into most of March, tromping through incredible mud, a very rainy season in Iowa, and for weeks and weeks, they are trapped in Iowa in the mud, and they're exhausted. They're still trying to get people out of Nauvoo, and they fight, and so by early spring, most are out of Nauvoo, but there's still about 1,500 poor that are still trapped that can't travel yet. We talked last time about how Newell Knight was finally making a plan to say, okay, the strong guys are going to go ahead. We'll plant some crops out there. The rest of you come as you're ready, because we have so many poor and so many needs, but we're trying to figure out how we do this. And so Brigham Young's got to figure out how we're going to do this. So here comes his first major decision. He's got a problem. How do we finance this thing? We're poor. We've left all our houses. Most of the people haven't been able to sell their houses, so we're just kind of trying to get out of Nauvoo. So in January of 1846, Brigham Young is going to write Jesse Little, who was kind of the presiding elder in New England, and he's going to say, I need you to go to the White House and see if we can't get some help. Kind of with an idea towards, we never got our reparations for what we lost in Missouri, but maybe this might be a way that they can kind of pay us back a little bit. And he's offering that the saints could build roads and bridges and things for the westward expansion. Because remember in all of this, too, we're right in the middle of Manifest Destiny, which is we must fulfill the entire continent all the way to California. But at the moment, who owns California? Mexico does. Okay. And this trackless waste in between is kind of up for grabs, but it's still Mexico mostly. Oregon is still kind of unclaimed a bit. And Joseph had been worried about in his presidential campaign, we got to get to Oregon before somebody else claims it. So maybe the saints, President Polk, maybe the saints can build roads and westward expansion. Because right now you just have like the Lewis and Clark Trail. And you've got a Santa Fe trail that comes out of Nebraska down. We can improve all those roads. So Little is going to reaches out to President Polk, and he finally meets with him in June, right after they've declared war on Mexico. And Polk agrees to commission a battalion of 500 of these Latter-day Saints as they're going out there. And his journal says, I love this, I'm gonna put Stephen Kearney in charge. He's authorized to receive into service as volunteers a few hundred of the Mormons who are now on their way to California with a view to conciliate them, attach them to our country, and prevent them from taking part against us. We're going to declare war on Mexico. We didn't treat them really well while they were in our country, and they could join with the Mexicans against us. And they have thousands and thousands of these guys that are now out in this disputed territory. They could be turned against us. So let's, okay, we can do that. If we can get them into our service and keep them attached emotionally to our country, so let's put together a battalion of 500. Okay? Oh, they did. Maybe it was Whigs and Democrats. Tories. Whigs and Tories. Republican Party is going to come really mainly through Abraham Lincoln coming forward against the two horrible things in society. Slavery and polygamy. Yeah, we got to get those two twin pillars of barbarism. They were called. Okay, so anyway. So he's gonna send Kearney all the way out to Nebraska because the Saints have bogged down. They run out of money. They're tired from the mud, and they're starting to gather, and they make an agreement with the government for a spot on the river next to the Indian reservation that's there. The Potawatomis? Potawatomi, is that right? Uh-huh. But we're going to be right. We're going to give you a spot temporarily. We know you're going to California, but we'll let you stay there. So Parley P. Pratt is able to make an agreement with the Indian supervisor agent.
So where was the western border
of the
United States?
That was it.
Was it the Mississippi River,
Well, it's on the other side of Missouri, where Missouri was. It's like. Just on that.
So is that spot winter quarters?
That's winter quarters. Yeah. Potawatomis. Potawatomi. Okay. All right. So yeah. There's the deal. Here's the deal. What's going to happen with these 500 guys is that most of them don't have family. Some do, but most of them, and this is kind of our Hinckley namesake, Arza, is going to enlist when they are mustered at Council Bluffs. The idea is, anybody other with Mormon battalion ancestors? Okay, right. The idea was is they were going to be given $47 for uniforms and supplies and stuff like that as a wage, okay? And what's going to happen is that they're going to collect all 500 of those things and put them into church coffers, and then now they have the money to move the rest of the thing forward, okay? And all totaled, it's estimated that the church collected about $30,000 in wages and things from the government paying for the Mormon battalion that went into church coffers was the thing that paid for the westward, paid for the pioneers. It's pretty interesting plan. Okay, so they're gonna muster here, obviously, Oregon Trail here, and then they're gonna come down here. Does take them just a few weeks. Takes them about 3 weeks with Brigham Young's pushing. We're leaving the United States, and you're going to, now you want us to serve in your army. It took him some time to say, this is how the Lord is doing this. The Lord's hand is in this. This is how we're going to pay for this thing. Okay, so all right, we'll do it. They get 500, four companies, A, B, C, and D. Yeah.
My great great grandfather's journal has a note in there that. I haven't seen her up in church. It says it was also a side agreement. Not long after that, the militia went back to D.C. to get permission to shoot bombs.
Oh, wow.
The president told them, look, leave them alone. Every able-bodied man they got in our army helping us fight a war.
Wow. No, I didn't know that. That's interesting. Okay.
Not long after the Mormon battalions recruited
the mobs
went back to D.C. to get permission to pursue the Saints and finish them off to end the Mormon problem. And the president told them, leave them alone, because every able-bodied man they have is in our army helping us fight our war in Mexico.
Yeah. And also think about what that means, because you're right. If we're going to pull 500 able-bodied guys out of here, that leaves the Saints even more destitute, which is, all right, we're going next year.
But the leader of the Mormon battalion was a colonel?
Yeah, Kearney.
And
Stephen Kearney.
500 men at that time have had a general as their leader?
Wouldn't you think? They didn't. It was a colonel. It was led by a colonel. And then Kearney will die just a few months later, and another guy takes over.
Well, another important detail, the 500 battalion members were added with over 1,000 other non-Mormon.
Yeah, so some people had families.
They didn't want to give them the opportunity to form a fighting unit and leave. They wanted to make sure that they were under control.
That's right. There was a battalion within a larger...
They weren't by themselves.
No. And the ironic thing is they were serving alongside a battalion from Missouri. Imagine how that went. Okay. And so again, they're going to muster here. And then while the Saints are going to continue to follow more of the Oregon Trail the next spring, they're going to head south. And most of them don't have horses. Arza, in his journal, and I've got his journal, he's going to say they're walking. I mean, very few had, so they really, he says, we walked from here, and they're going to come down the Cimarron Pass, going to get down to Santa Fe. Lieutenant Colonel Cook takes over. They're going to get down here, and right somewhere down here, this green line here, by the way, is in his journal, because there is a sick battalion that will, enough of them are sick. Part of the problem was that the guy that takes over, Cook, they hate Cook because he is kind of a dictator, and he has a doctor, and this doctor is trying to, his medical methods are killing the guys. There are people dying from his chamomile. Yeah, they are dying. And so, like, Arza gets sick, and he says, I refuse to take it. And so that there's a lot of animosity here. But by the time they get here, there's a large group of them, over 100, that are all sick. And what's going to happen here is that they're going to turn around while the rest of the battalion goes down here and conquers Tucson. This sick battalion will go up here, and they will spend the winter in Pueblo, Colorado. And then in the spring, where Arza will take, his pants are worn out. He trades with an Indian brave, he says, for a piece of leather, and he makes some leather pants. And then he says, we had to cut my pants off because they had just molded to him. And then he makes some buckskin pants that he can then walk from backup, and they will then join, rather than, they're all gone. This sick battalion will come up here and try and catch Brigham Young's vanguard troops coming across. They will miss them by 4 days. And so they're 4 days behind Brigham Young's vanguard. Brigham Young will get into the valley July 24th. This sick battalion will get into the valley July 29th, right behind them, and build South Fort and a bunch of things. So,
what was the point in time where it was agreed that the Mormon battalion got to elect their own officers?
I don't know that they ever, I'm not sure that happened, because they were under a bigger groups. It might have happened somewhere on their way to San Diego.
In Fredericksburg, Texas, there is
There was, I, my understanding is, and they actually have a town square in Fredericksburg, there is a portion of the Mormon battalion that spent a number of months in Fredericksburg and helped the German immigrants in Fredericksburg learn how to farm. Fredericksburg, Texas, yeah.
You sure that wasn't Lyman White's group that was down there?
I don't know. They, in their literature and in the...
They actually say it's Mormon battalion.
My recollection is
wow. Say it was Mormon battalion. That's interesting. That would be news. Yeah.
I have a...
Yeah.
I have a friend whose family does genealogy. I'm sorry, were you just done?
Yes.
I know you are. It's anyway, a friend whose family is from that area, and they had come into the Port of Galveston when they immigrated from Germany, and there was a guy that was taking them northward, and they were supposed to be going to Ohio. And when they got there, they dropped him off in Texas and told him this is Ohio. This is a whole group of people. and they're Ohio would be.
Oh, yeah, this is Ohio. Yeah. That, yeah, it's a little off.
Weather.
Yeah, it's a little, the weather's different. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. This is Cleveland.
Yeah.
And the significance of that is that, I mean, the fact that they even referenced the Mormons was the fact that they really did save the German immigrants.
Wow. Yeah, now you're going to cause me to have to do a little study on that.
Well, didn't Lyman White end up in?
Lyman White was down there when he split up. He did. No, no, that's where he was. He was down near Fredericksburg.
So if the weather was that much different in Texas, then maybe the Germans did need to be taught.
Yeah, it wasn't going to be. No, that's true. That's
true.
That
could be why all the Germans live in Minnesota.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Budgers.
And we went and we sang and the
governor
came who came and probably had there's not a governor that doesn't make comparison. But and that was what, 28 years ago?
Wow. They're finally putting them.
It was interesting, you know, because we did that, because I had no knowledge that they'd come. You think a Mormon battalion, you think they went to
California,
and you know all this, but you don't think of how they got there.
Yeah.
And then to be in Santa Fe and have them go, oh my gosh, having been to the East Coast, then being to Santa Fe, knowing how far it is,
yeah,
to drive even that far.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's amazing to have them there. It's also interesting. First people were starving over on the East Coast. They could have bought a taco on the street. But okay.
Yeah.
They just come over to Santa Fe.
Yeah, they
really. So, Kevin, yeah. I looked it up, and it has to do with Lyman Wright.
Does it with Lyman Wright?
And it says the Mormon Battalion has connection to Fredericksburg, Texas, primarily through the Zodiac Colony.
Right, Lyman Wright.
Established by the Mormons near the town. So
I wonder if they are they're calling Lyman White setting that up and misnaming it.
The battalion itself was military until it marched to California. A group of Mormons under Lyman Wright later settled in an area that played a significant role in the early.
Yeah. I don't think that was the battalion. I think that was Lyman White's calling.
They might have tagged along though.
Could have.
And dropped off.
Well, they're gone before that. Yeah.
In her class, her history class, her teacher came in and was talking about the longest march. Yeah. No battle.
Yeah, this is
and
it.
And I can't remember what she said. And my daughter in class said, no, it's the Mormon Battalion.
Which,
and
by
her
far.
History teacher was teaching something else. And she was going, no, you got it wrong. And he came in the next day and, he's gone, right, Mormon Battalion. Came in the next day, and this teacher, this is why we respect it, came in the next day, I did the research, you're right, I was wrong, I told the class.
Wow.
And you're going,
yeah.
Wow. You don't get that every day.
Well, in fact, part of what happens because of this history, there have been a number of times either with LDS treks, or I actually did it at our last family reunion, I'll throw on a cowboy hat and play Arza there, because he's got a story of that again, they're going to get down here. He's still walking. He's going to come up here. They will come right behind Brigham Young, come in July 29th. They will build the first fort. And then Brigham Young says, okay, I'm now going back to winter quarters. He's only there about 3 or 4 weeks. And ours has got a brother, Ira, who's still back on the trail. This is President Hinckley's grandfather. He's still out there. So ours is going to go back to go get his brother, Ira. So he'll go with Brigham Young. But the deal is that when they leave the valley 3 weeks later in August of 1847, he's now riding a horse. And he said for the first time, he's getting to ride a horse in all of this from here, down to there, down to there, down to there, down to there. He finally gets to ride a horse back to winter quarters. And he's thrilled. And then somewhere up here, they wake up in the morning and Indians have stole his horse. And he was so torqued. I'm finally getting him to walk all the way back. And like two nights later, Brigham Young has extended an invitation to the local Indians to come for dinner. And they bring the horse. one of his buddies goes, hey, ours, isn't that your horse? And he goes, oh, that's my horse. And he goes back to his tent. He gets his Mormon battalion rifle. And yes, this thing. Okay. And he's marching across the deal there. And Lorenzo Young says, young man, where are you going? He says, I'm going to get my horse. He's ready to go get this. And he runs and tells Brigham Young. And Brigham Young is going to come running out and he's going to catch Arza and he's going to say, what are you doing? I'm getting my horse. He goes, young man, leave it alone. And Arza will look at him and he will look at his horse and he'll look back at Brigham Young and he'll say, you're the boss. And he will go back and put his rifle away. And years later in Rexburg, shortly before he died, he says, when I think back on that, I'm relieved that I almost started a war with the Indians. And Brigham Young talked me out of it. So anyway, yeah.
Just so I understand, it sounds like the government paid the Mormon Battalion participate in the war.
Yeah.
And you get these 100 down there and then they just abandoned ship and quit and took off.
These guys?
Yeah. The sick guys.
The sick guys, yeah, they were all really ill.
They're sick, but look how far they went.
I know. Yeah, I'm not sure why the decision was made, other than the fact that we need to keep on going and that they had some connections up there in Pueblo. So these guys are like, then we'll go help Brigham Young. So then, because supposedly they had gotten their, it wasn't really like pay as much as it was clothing, enlistment bonus and stuff like that, that they're all coughing up to. And
they were getting paid a lot.
Yeah, because Parley Pratt, somewhere along, or not Parley, who is, one of, anyway, one of the 12 will find them over here and they will turn their money over to the church. Just over the winter. As soon as the snow melts, they're on their way to try and catch Brigham Young. Okay. The rest, by the way, will now go all the way down. They will capture Tucson without a battle.
Yeah, they're the longest military march in the fighting their battle.
Yeah. They will fight the battle of the bulls. Not the bulge, the battle of the bulls. There's some wild bulls that are coming. They have to shoot some because these bulls are going crazy. And then they will end up in San Diego. Some will re-enlist long enough to go up to Sutter's Mill and discover gold. There it is. There it is. And then they will then march and join in, make up. And so they're actually bringing gold with them into the valley.
Thank you. Bye.
See ya. That's we're disbanded.
I don't know how they actually
because remember, the war doesn't last very long.
That's what they did with me when I got out of the Navy.
Yeah. See ya.
Goodbye. See ya.
They did it with Forrest Gump, remember? They just say, you're done. You can.
Me a check and set me up to date with my bag.
Yeah, you're done. Appreciate your help. So they're out of there. So anyway, Mormon battalion then. But you do have to think about how big of a gutting this was to the overall effort to get all of the saints to the Great Basin when you have this many good working young people to do that. And ours was 20 at that point. Okay. No, this is older. Remember, they would dress up from time to time in ceremonial garb to, okay.
You gotta look at this picture.
So that
yeah, it's there. By the way, he's then called by John Taylor to go down and settle the Salt River thing. He goes back down to Arizona, and he wants to live in Arizona, help settle it, and he's a good commissioner with the Indians. And he comes back to tell Wilford Woodruff by then that he wants to stay in Arizona and settle it. And Wilford will say, your brother-in-law, Thomas Ricks, is going to Ricksburg. Will you join him in Snake River Valley? So then,
Arizona to Ricksburg.
Yes, I know. And so they will go up, and they're going to settle. He will then settle Ricksburg. He's the first patriarch. Anyway, lot of fun stories. And you guys have similar stories. I don't want to. Arza? A-R-Z-A. Ira. Whenever I run into people now and they're a Hinckley, they'll go, Ira or Arza? We're Arza. President Hinckley is Ira, so we're related, but close. Anyway, and then the two brothers build Cove Fort in central Utah. Oh, yeah, it's right here, right? Take your hat off, dude. Okay. I think he's got a sidearm here, too, but anyway. All right. So that said. Okay, so let's go back to the Platte River. This is where the saints now are going to start gathering here, and there's a couple of major decisions that now have to be made about how we handle this going forward. They have a problem, and that is, as they're strung out all along the way, James Strange has come out of Wisconsin. And he's not just trying to build a church. He's getting revelations. Wow. He's got a revelation from Joseph Smith naming him the next prophet. Even though he just joined the church in March, you know, 3 months before Joseph died. But he's getting revelations. Thus saith the Lord. Thus saith the Lord. Thus saith the Lord. Now, if you think about it, most people that had joined the church, they were joining the church based on revelations. This was a church that received revelations. Most weren't joining the church because of Joseph Smith, or even joining the church because there were gold plates. They were joining the church that got word-for-word revelations. Sometimes we tease the fact that we kind of see the church and our prophets as like fax machines from heaven. You know, they're going to just receive fax machines, and we go, well, that isn't really basically how it worked. Guess what? Under Joseph Smith, it's exactly how it worked. he would dictate and word for word it would come, it'd be received and written down. James Strange was doing that. He was getting revelation after revelation after revelation. So people like William Smith, like William Marks, Martin Harris, also for some period of time were associated with James Strange. And as the saints are spread out from Nauvoo to winter quarters, James Strange is poaching members along the way. There are people that are leaving and going to Wisconsin.
That's not a whole lot different from a young man telling a young lady, hey, I've had a revelation that
you're supposed to marry me.
And sometimes the young woman goes, oh, well, if it's a revelation.
We're a revelatory church. That's how we work. And that's why even Sidney Rigdon is saying, and I'm getting revelations too. Brigham Young or Joseph Smith said, I'm supposed to be the guardian. Okay?
So what are some of the revelations we have?
Yeah, we've got some of them this was supposed, that James Strange was the anointed one now, that they were supposed to all move to Wisconsin, that they were to live communally like Zions. And they were good, especially those, we'll talk about polygamy big time just a sec, but even those that were struggling a little bit with polygamy, he wasn't teaching polygamy. So we're getting revelations without the polygamy. And so there is a draw. Ultimately, he will then start teaching polygamy and one of his leaders will kill him. James Strange, he's in his 40s. What happened is that maybe the best way to remember if you look at where Nauvoo is, they'd gone up to Wisconsin to Lyman White and others were logging up there to send wood down the river to build the temple. So that's when they run into James Strange. Okay, he was up there. So Sidney Rigdon, James Strange, these guys are all getting that. Even, you know, the William Law and Wilson Law, they're trying to form a church. But the question is, okay, now the 12 is in charge. Where's Brigham Young's revelations?
What I find fascinating about James Strange is that he had some metal plates.
Yeah. He is a master at this.
Right. Obviously, it's
true. It looks like he might be this. Yeah, he did. He did. Without the polygamy. Okay. So where's Brigham Young's revelation? So now we're going to get to January, get through the winter in January 1847. He hasn't left yet for Salt Lake. But they're all stuck in winter quarters and people are dying and everything, and saints are being poached. We need a revelation from Brigham Young. And so he will get that, and that comes in January of 1847, and we call that DNC 136. And you can go back and read through DNC 136, but I wanted to clip out just a section of it to see kind of what the Lord really had intent in January of 1847, because this was the problem. And it's going to be the word and the will of the Lord. And they'll refer to this often. What does it say in the word and the will? This is the word and the will. You got the vision. You've got a number of things. This is the word and the will of God concerning the camp of what? Israel. Now you're going to start seeing this flavor. Start thinking of parallels here. Because I've asked over and over, was this a New Testament church or was this more of an Old Testament church? This is an Old Testament church, guys. It's almost like the New Testament almost didn't happen. So much of the footing for Joseph Smith and others, and even in the Revelations, is pushing an Old Testament view of things. Okay? So when we talk about the restoration, and they're seen as the restoration, they're restoring an Old Testament, patriarchal, prophet-centered church. And the Lord is feeding that also, that this is Camp of Israel. So now you're not just a group of pioneers that got kicked out of Nauvoo. Who are you? You're Israel.
Right.
Chosen one. You're leaving where? Egypt. And going where? The promised land. Oh, now we have a new context. Once you frame it in that thing, we now know what we're doing. We got to leave Pharaoh behind, and by miracles, we will make it across the vast wilderness to our promised land.
So, I might have misunderstood the way you framed that. Did Brigham Young feel pressure to provide a revelation?
I think he did. I think he did. I think it was needed because important information is going to come. But remember, Brigham Young is the guy that we talked about before that says, that, you know, they're in the wagon stuck in the river. And one of the brethren goes, shouldn't we pray about it, how we get this wagon out of the river? And he goes, I prayed this morning, get out and push. You know, this is, he's not, he just sees what needs to be done. And he's just, but so he has to stop, get a revelation. He does. And it's the word and the will. And part of it is, let all the people of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and those who journey with them be organized into companies with a covenant and promise to keep all the commandments and statutes of the Lord our God. Now, very specifically, what is he concerned about? Let the companies be organized with captains of hundreds, captains of fifties, captains of tens, with a president and two counselors at the head, under the direction of the 12 apostles. Okay? When is the first time we've heard of captains of hundreds, fifties,
Jethro.
And tens? Yes, and Moses. Okay? You hear it? Here's the language. Now, part of the reason for this, and this shall be our covenant, that we will walk in the ordinances of the Lord. Okay? 7. Okay? And specifically, here's the real need. Let each company with their captains and presidents decide how many can go out each spring, next spring. Then choose out a sufficient number of able-bodied and expert men who are left over to take the team seeds and farming utensils to go as pioneers to prepare for putting in spring crops. Whose pattern is that? Newell Knight's. Okay? Newell Knight, who had proposed this to his family organization in Nauvoo.
Which happened?
Newell. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a year before. Let each company bear an equal portion according to the dividend of their property in taking the poor, the widows, and the fatherless. And specifically, and this is Brigham Young's main worry, and the families of those who have gone into the army. He calls these the battalion boys' families. My battalion boys have gone, and I promise those guys I would get their families to the valley if they would go serve. So their idea is these will be organized so that there's an equal portion of strong and wealthy and poor and fatherless and widowless would be married, wouldn't they? Widowed. Yes. Yes. So that we can organize these into a groups of strong and weak. And they will go out together. It sounds like a pretty good plan, doesn't it? Okay. Now, how he's going to implement this, this is where the fun part comes. Okay? So let's just put in our head here. He's going to say, keep yourself from evil to take the name of the Lord in vain, for I am the Lord thy God, the God of your fathers, the God of who? Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Okay? You are the camp of Israel. You are Israel. Okay? I am he who led the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt, comma, and I can do this with you. And my arm is stretched out to the last days to save my people, Israel. We are the camp of Israel. We are the Israelites. Okay? So look at the parallels here. The Israelites, they come out of Egypt to the promised land. They're funded, how? By Egypt's gold and silver before they leave. Moses leads them, staff in hand. Okay? They're organized first by 12 tribes. Okay? Now, what constitutes a tribe?
Apostles are the tribes.
You're jumping ahead. What constitutes a tribe in the Old Testament? Yeah, okay, you're going to be one of those sons, and so really it's an extended family, is it not a tribe? And that that family, that tribe is going to be responsible for taking care of one another. As you're on your way out into the wilderness, you're leaving civilization, you're leaving Egypt, all this bad stuff, but we're now going to go out into the wilderness, and families and the family gathering and the family group and the tribe will be responsible for taking care of one another. Within that tribe, now you're going to have captains then in hundreds, fifties, and tens, captains to lead them, and now it's going to go out with an organizational group out into the wilderness. Does that make sense?
I think they would have appreciated quail.
Yeah, if we could get more of that happening. We do get quail, but where? On the banks of the Mississippi for the poor that got left over. Remember, we have that quail incident in September of 1846. Okay, so what happens then with the saints? The government is seen as Egypt. How are they funded? By the battalion money, so the government is still going to have to pay up to get them out there. Okay. Brigham Young is going to lead them, cane in hand. What cane is that, by the way? It's his black cane. And it's got a silver gold head. And if you open that up, what's underneath it? Joseph's hair. Yeah, put that in there. That's going to be the same cane that he's going to, you know, stride out to the in the valley and go, here's where we will build the temple of our God. Right there with that black cane.
Really fortunate they didn't spend 40 years in the wilderness.
Yeah, I think so too. It's a little shorter, but it doesn't matter because this is who we are. Okay. Now, it's going to be organized by 12 tribes. And within these 12 tribes, hundreds, fifties, and tens with captains to lead them. Okay. So who's going to constitute the 12 tribes? The Quorum of the 12. Okay. But what is a tribe? Family organization. Here we go. You ready for this? Let's go back to the temple for a sec. And I'm pulling this actually from a historian document, and I'm going to show you in just a second. Further, Young introduced a new ordinance called adoption that emphasized patriarchal dependence on a patriarch. The ceremony featured grown men and women being ritually adopted as children by priesthood leaders, primarily the 12. If you're going to be sealed, first of all, to your husband or wife, then who are you going to be sealed to? One of the 12. Yeah, more than likely. Okay. The practice forged tangible linkages to presiding apostles at the very moment it seemed to the Mormons the world was falling apart. One participant explained, "This order of adoption will link the chain of the priesthood in such a way that it cannot be separated." Another saint wrote to Brigham Young, pleading to be sealed to him without the priesthood connection. Without that priesthood connection, he was going to be an orphan wandering through the wicked world without a father of promise. Okay, I know. We look at it now after, you know, years of tweaking and organizing how we handle our seals and adoptions and our genealogy. But think about where they were and what was going on and their understanding and what was facing them in 1,000-mile trek out there and what was happening in the temple. Preparation was is that they were now being adopted into families, basically being adopted into tribes. With 12 apostles.
Social and cultural perspective, this was a huge benefit.
Oh,
at the time.
And worked.
And helped that these companies would survive without mutiny and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Was this done like prior to patriarchal blessings that also gave the tribe?
Yeah.
Assignment, or did it happen after?
This is in addition to that, Jeff, because this is, we are literally, as we're adopting in, now this is still going to be like I love the Coltons, so I'm going to have her, I'm going to seal you to me so that I can save Jim.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, but by doing that, I have sealed I've sealed them to me, and now you're now part of my tribe, part of my family.
Now, when you apostatize, what are we going
to
do?
You're gonna get sealed to Charlie, because Charlie's, you know, if I'm falling apart, yeah. But that also means is we're going to go into the wilderness. You are now part of my tribe.
But did any of these 12 then apostatize? They did.
Not of this 12.
None of this 12.
Not of this 12.
Okay.
So when the saints came, first of all, did they get endowed in, or did they have the endowment? Second, were they sealed to one of the 12 apostles?
Yeah, that's what was happening. In other words, if they're coming from Europe, and they're coming out there. It's one of the reasons why. So they're doing this in Nauvoo before they go, because we got to get this thing organized. It's one of the, not just for spiritual salvation, but temporal salvation to get us across the plains.
But is the question, is she asking whether or not they were sealed to the apostle before they received their endowment?
No.
No, it's part of that process.
If the group is initially went west, what about the people that were coming who would never live in Nauvoo?
Right. So that's why as soon as they get there, some endowments are done on Ensign Peak. So they build the endowment house as fast as they can, and they will start doing. But for that, primarily, this first group coming out of Nauvoo, there was the spiritual pattern set up, but there was also this temporal need to be able to get them across the plains, Israel fashion.
How long did this practice of adoption,
50 years. That's what Wilford Woodruff will get a revelation for in 1890, whatever it was. They were still, now it might be as they were getting, as the saints got to Utah and started having kids, if I'm your son, I might still want to be sealed to you because you're righteous. But if I'm one of those converts and my parents never joined the church, I'm still being sealed to Joseph Smith or Brigham Young or Heber C. Kimball. That principle of or a righteous man in our midst, because I've got to be able to tie my link to a righteous person.
Aren't we kind of sealed to Jesus Christ when we're baptized?
Well, yeah, but... Okay, thank you. Yeah.
So, is there a record since we're a church? So, I want to know who I'm sealed to. I mean,
yeah.
Which of those?
I want to know.
In the temple, you see who you were sealed to, right?
I want to go back further.
Oh, yeah, yes.
Yeah. I've got a grandfather who's
yeah.
one of them.
Well, remember when I was talking about Arza, I've mentioned before that when the St. George Temple opens, Arza goes down and he's sealed to his two wives at that point, but he is also sealed. He also, as wives, he seals his mother, his grandmother, his great grandmother, and his great great grandmother to him as wives. Now, ultimately, when the new revelation comes through, they will redo those sealings and put everything right so that those women are now sealed to their husbands, not to Arza. So there was a lot of coming back and doing things right once we understood the actual order of things. Okay, because we're going to do that, right? We can get this right. Yeah, Jeff?
In my great-great-grandfather's journal, he talks specifically about how when he and his wife got married, they went up from to be sealed in the endowment house.
Yeah.
There is no historical or written thing about being sealed from a apostle.
Wow. Okay. It'd be interesting to see what the genealogy tags for that. Maybe they were holding off at that point. I don't know.
This was before 1870.
Yeah. Wow.
I have a relative that was sealed to Lorenzo Stowe had taught them in England.
Yeah.
And when they finally got to Utah, the mother was sealed to Lorenzo Stowe and lived where, I think they were in Manti,
mm-hmm.
lived there. and had her daughter, who was never married, who died like as a teenager, sealed to Lorenzo's daughter.
Sure.
And there are records for that.
Yeah. Now, why is this going to be super important? Again, we have a trick we got to do, guys. This saint is going to say, and if being sealed to Young was too great a request, he would be linked to another apostle as long as he could be attached to somebody who had a sufficient authority to assure eternal glory. Okay? All right. So, what are we going to do here? All right. Here's what we're going to do here. So, I was trying to copy.
So they're kind of inserting themselves in the role that Christ claims as advocate with the Father, and no one comes to the Father but by me.
Yeah, but this is sealed by power to do this. Ooh, this is not.
But they've got, some of the people are believing that they can't get to the Father except they go through these individuals, these apostles.
Well, you've got to be, even now we're saying, who are you sealed to, right? Apparently I did. Okay, hold on. Okay, now we're going to get. All right, here we go. Here we go. Again, I was going to try and copy this, but I was having a hard time getting the. Here we go. Yay! Okay, so this is from a BYU Studies article. But I want you to listen closely to what they were doing. Brigham Young is going to give careful instructions to the body of saints to be organized under priesthood authority. Brigham envisioned all the members of the second group of immigrants, not the 190 some odd that goes in his vanguard, the first group, but after coming after him. He envisioned members of the second group of migrants being formed into adoption families where the saints were to migrate and settle in the Great Basin in family units. So if I'm someone like John D. Lee, who was executed for the Mountain Meadows Massacre, we'll talk about in a few weeks, he was an adopted son of Brigham Young. So he would be in the Brigham Young tribe. And when they're going to go out to Utah, then these family units, almost like, think about what happened with Israel when it gets to the Promised Land. Where's the land of Judah? Where's the land of Ephraim? Where's the land of Manasseh? And then these tribes will take care of one another because they're in a family unit. Well, he was picturing that as we're on our way out here, they're going to be organized into adoption family. So if you're sealed to Lorenzo Snow, then which migrant family are you going out across the plains? In the Lorenzo Snow migrant family. That's how. And if you're sealed to Brigham Young, then you're going to be in the Brigham Young thing. And if you're Wilford Woodruff, you're going to be in the Wilford Woodruff family organization tribe thing. And now within that tribe, then you'll have hundreds and fifties and tens. Does that make sense?
So that's the default answer to her question about who her grandfather was sealed to, whoever company he came out with.
That would be the first indication of how we're going to take care of. Yeah.
I want to know if Brigham Young can be my
grandfather. we don't be doing that no more.
I understand how you're saying that you're going together. Were they like all that different skills?
Within that family organization, everybody that was sealed to Brigham Young, now within that group, you're going to have
different skills and abilities, and some are widowless.
They grew that way, or they were formed that way? In other words,
it's closer to that, but it's still based on who I'm, because they were seeking out Brigham Young and Wilford Woodruff. I want to be sealed to you. Okay, we'll do that. That puts you then in my family group, and now you're going to travel in my immigration train. Okay, this is Brigham Young's idea. Now, here's what's going to happen, though. Where it gets more fun. I know, it gets fun, right? Because what's underlying all of this is another underlying assumption that has not yet been resolved and won't be resolved for a few years to come. Now, the implementation of Brigham's adoptive family program became difficult for Parley Pratt and John Taylor, who were on their way back from England, and they were kind of pooped, so they weren't willing to go out to the initial vanguard out there. But there was another problem. People weren't prepared to go that season. But in Parley's mind, and actually in his brother's as well, Parley felt that he could make changes to Brigham's plan because he believed that he held equal authority with Brigham Young when Brigham Young was not present. What had not been resolved yet was that the church was being led by the Quorum of the Twelve, and Brigham Young was merely the leader of the Quorum of the Twelve. Which really means he was kind of leading out. He might be like the quorum president, but Parley believed that he had just as much rights and inspiration and authority as Brigham Young did. We have not. That's why they haven't reconstituted the first presidency yet. So what's going to happen? Yeah, if you start reading this, Parley's, he can make changes. So I love this next part here. John Taylor's going to agree with him, by the way. When the 12 are present, they lead. Every man ought to respect another man's authority. Here's the high council. You need to do this. And he's going to say, if Brother Pratt is here, he would be Elder Young. If two or three of the 12 were here, the oldest would preside. But all are one, and the Lord Jesus acknowledged the same Savior of the others. If the 12 are assembled, send an epistle, and they would be bound to receive it, and Elder Hyde would be governed by it. Okay? Whoever's there, if you have an apostle here, he can make decisions for the church. If you have three apostles here, the oldest, we're going to lean towards the oldest. Okay? Yeah.
In some of these cases, what choice did they have? They couldn't talk to Brigham Young. How long would it take a letter to get back?
Yeah. Some of the practicality of it is hard. Yeah, and so you can see kind of where that understanding lies. But Brigham Young is going to say, especially once the revelation comes and they know what the revelation is, now we have the word and will of the Lord about how we do this. And Parley goes, well, yeah, unless I'm here and you're not. Because you got revelation, but that doesn't necessarily mean I have to follow it. Because we get an example. I love this. 1846, Orson Hyde rebukes Parley Pratt for teaching plural marriage in England. And Parley responds to Orson Hyde. He says, you, Elder Hyde, do not hold the keys of sitting in judgment upon my head by your dreams, visions, and whisperings of the spirit, doubts or fears, or by any other means. This belongs to a united quorum, and they can only do it by testimony according to the laws of the kingdom. Okay? He elaborates. They come to me to ask who's the president and his two counselors. For some of this people, they have a little strangeism, James Strange, and a little Rigdonism. They're waiting for who's going to get the revelation. I don't know anything about three, except those dead. But I do know about the 12 who hold the keys of the kingdom and are president, and one of them by reason of age. Brigham Young, why is Brigham Young president of the church? President of the 12? He's 16 days older than the next guy. Okay?
We don't have any Talmudism.
Not yet.
In the group.
No. In fact, this is going to be, and I don't think I'm going to spend a lot of time on it. I will tell you that the council that they hold in Council Bluffs in December 1847, Orson Pratt is going to take the same tack. He believes that if the 12 are going to make a decision, that it should be a united decision by a quorum. If the president of the 12 makes a decision, but there are seven apostles who disagree with that, that should override what the president of the quorum of the 12 wants, because we're all equal in authority and a quorum decides. So we don't want the president of the church making a decision unilaterally. We're the checks and balance. This is a democratic thing. Yes?
So that's sort of what happened when the prophets began to want to change blacks in the Christian. But I'll just tell you.
It's the biggest reason for Orson's argument.
Yeah. And anecdotally, my dad obviously grew up in a religious family, and when he would disobey his father, his father would say to him, "You aren't a cardinal, you're nothing but a damn prat." Because we came from Harley. Yes, so we grew up with.
In a very hierarchical, patriarchal, yeah. And again, there are some temporal advantages for that, but the blacks in the priesthood, we're going to talk about that in a couple of weeks, is probably the number one argument for Orson's. And they will argue for days in Council Bluffs before they finally decide to reorganize the first presidency for that exact reason. And ultimately, Brigham's going to say, look, if we have to make a decision, we have to have seven apostles here to make a decision, but you're supposed to be scattered throughout the world carrying the gospel, we can't get anything done. It should be just a first presidency. So but this is where the battle lies. Okay? We are one, he says. We are equal so far as our conduct is equal. You are not higher or lower in one family than another. My mind is Brigham's mind, and my mind is the same as Heber's. We are one mind, but you got to get all the minds together, figure out how this works. Okay? Love this. Okay.
The academic view on Jesus as the apostle, Peter was the oldest.
Yeah, they would have gone that way. Okay, so why does this become a big deal? And maybe we'll just kind of, last few minutes, we'll just figure this up. Here's the problem. Parley changes the plan. That's the problem. Is that Brigham, before he left Winter Quarters, had his vanguard group ready to go. We're going to go. We're going to find this place. Now, coming behind us is going to, now you're going to have these companies that are organized by family units, and you guys follow them, get them all organized. And Parley is going to show up, he and John Taylor. They just think, this isn't really all that practical. We got to get these guys. So I think it's best, he says, to act according to our circumstances, or shall we stay here and theorize and alter for another week or two and copy that again and again to get the captain of 150s in this or that place? Okay. Grant's got captain of the first one. Now got it. I'm not going to counsel to what needs to happen any longer. And complete the organization of the first 100 because Brother Grant was not here. I have appointed a captain, and you know, and he just like, he is literally the father on a family vacation in the car going, get back. We're going to make great time. We're not going to stop and look at anything. We got to go. We got to get there tonight. Let's go. We're not going to sit and talk much longer. We got to get out of here. It's late in the spring. We got to move. Okay. So Parley Uncle John might be in Heber's family, and I might be in Brigham's, because we both own the same company and the same 50. Can alter us? I have not horns in my head or corns in my feet. I shan't hook or kick. He will abuse me. You know, he's just like, I don't think this works. Let's get out of here. Okay? So basically what Parley does is goes, who's ready to go? Let's go. We're out of here. Okay? And he's going to take... And so Brigham is coming back with ours in tow and stuff like that. This is where we get this great council on the prairie, where Brigham is got to the valley. They're actually starting to plant crops. He gets to the valley. He's coming down Immigration Canyon. He looks up. He sees Ensign Peak. He goes, that's the place. Joseph showed me it would look like that. There it is. This is it. Gets down there, plants his cane. They get it started, and then he starts heading back across Wyoming. And here comes Parley Pratt coming from the other direction, and where they had like just under 100, well, they had 202, I think, in that initial vanguard, but this is a smaller group coming back. Here comes Parley with 1,500 people coming the opposite direction. And Parley is thrilled. Look what I got! We're getting it done. We're making great time. And we will get there soon. But remember, this will be then what year or what month? Late. This is late. He's going to leave in August. He will run into Parley's 1,500 people in September. Anybody live in Utah in the fall? How long is your growing season if you start planting stuff in September?
Next year.
Yeah. That's why that first year, starvation was bad, because even the people that were coming, they came way late. The handcart companies came way late. You're going to try and do this in September, October? That's disastrous. That's why we get these stories of just people starving and like crawling on the ground to eat sago lilies in the valley, because it's all they can find to eat. It was disastrous, and it was disastrous on a couple of ends. Parley and John had 1,500 of the strongest. Who'd they leave behind? All the weak. There are 1,500 still sitting in Montrose across the river from Nauvoo, families of the battalion boys that aren't getting out of there at all. So they have to spend another winter. And Parley's mistake is colossal. It's huge. No, it's huge. Yeah.
You took 1,500 across.
Yeah.
You took the four strongest. You didn't get there in time, and you left everybody else.
You did.
And if you just been patient.
Parley didn't understand that there weren't grocery stores in Salt Lake.
No.
I was just going to say, you didn't have his PhD because that's from a husband. Maybe if you had your PhD, you could have some patience.
Yeah. You know, now, September 4th. Brigham Young and the Quorum meet the Pratt Taylor group. Brigham was not satisfied. That is a understatement. Yes. Wilford Woodruff relates.
I've heard that Brigham Young could get going.
He got going. Brother Parley Pratt and Taylor had been to England and done good work, returned to winter quarters, and there had wrongly disorganized the two divisions and companies that the Quorum of the Twelve had spent the whole winter organizing and was also governed by revelation. Parley took the lead in the matter and entirely disregarded our organization and mixed up the companies. Brigham Young chastised him for his course and taught us principle, said that when we set apart one or more of the 12 to go and do a certain piece, they would be blessed in doing it, and the quorum would back them up. But when one of the quorum interfere with the work of the majority, they burn their fingers and do wrong. When the majority of the 12 plant 12 stakes in Zion, again, tribes, right? And establish a president over the stake, and do one or more of the 12 have the right to interfere in those councils? No, you know, he was hot, and yeah, the quorum members voted unanimous. You want unanimous? Let's vote. And unanimously, they vote that Parley had committed an error in carrying out his organization. Parley fights for a while, but ultimately, to his everlasting credit, he will confess his fault. Brigham stated that he would chastise Brother Parley or anyone in the quorum as much as he pleased when they were out of the way and they could not help themselves. But he had done it for a good and only done it when constrained by the power of God. Brigham felt the quorum held the best men on earth, but they must be chastised to maintain their loyalty. Okay? Now, ultimately, Parley will get them to the valley. Then he's got to go back to winter quarters, and then they will reorganize the quorum, the first presidency, in January 1848. And from that point on, that it's then resolved after that. But yeah, they did. And in fact, think about if you're now a family organization and they're going to put together a company that's going to go out and settle Fillmore. Okay, if you send a group out to Fillmore that already has blacksmiths and bakers and all those kind of thing, who's going to be the county commissioner over the county? State president. Who's going to be the mayor of the city? The bishop. Who's going to be the commissioner of education in that? The Sunday school president. Remember, we're not going to get the Relief Society for a few more years. Because part of the problem with Brigham shutting down the Relief Society was the fact that one of the things that's not being said when we talk about this family organization, polygamy, if this is the way we're going to organize the companies, over 200 men will enter polygamy and about 2,000 people. So most of those family organizations were in polygamous setups. And he was unhappy with Emma and the Relief Society for arguing so strongly against polygamy that the Relief Society needed to step back here if we're going to then implement polygamy in a massive way before we head out across the plains. But about 200 men.
200 men.
And thousands of women.
So there were not, these women didn't have other husbands?
They did. Some did. Some didn't. Some didn't. Some were being married polygamously without a sealing, like sealing a couple.
So there would be 400 or 500 men that were married to one wife. And 200 men that were married
to No. That means that sometimes if you're single, you can go ahead and we'll be sealed husband to wife. But if you're married, I will be sealed to you and you're sealed to me as a... So that was happening a lot. It would be both ways, okay? But the idea is to build these tribes before we head out, and we're going to do that primarily using plural marriage as the tool. It was kind of on pause, the word of wisdom. Because if you read what Brigham Young is saying when you travel, make sure you bring 50 pounds of coffee. So they were chug-alonging, they were drinking coffee all the way across the plains.
Stay awake on the road.
You got to stay awake on the road. How did Brigham Young say? Yes, that's it. In other words, the way he's handling, the way he is organizing the women is through a plural marriage structure to build within a tribe based on the Quorum of the Twelve. But it's very hierarchical.
The default when the leader or the leaders are polygamous with wives who are also married to a single husband.
Yeah.
The default was that those marriages wouldn't be consummated.
Right. That's exactly right.
It's just a paternal kind of a relationship.
Yeah, but because again, the main important thing is the women need to be sealed to a righteous man.
Because I'm, okay, I got it.
They need to be sealed. And if they're single, I will marry them. If they're married, then they will be sealed to me. But those are listed as marriages. But that is the patriarchal structure that they rolled out of. So
we don't know that those men are righteous.
Yeah, we hope. Okay. But it's as even more true, though, if you're not a member. I'm not going to consummate a marriage, but I will at least save you because you're married to... Okay. So we got... Yeah.
When the Relief Society was organized or whatever back, was it... You said in the beginning that it was sort of a closed place. You had to be voted in. And
it was built under Masonic structure. No, when was... Someone said the date... 1868, and now it's going to be reconstituted. Yeah, they're going to pull in every woman. And again, think about if you're out in Tooele, if you're out in Tooele, or Delta, or Parowan, or St. George, or Logan, having a functioning Relief Society set of sisters that can take care of one another, especially in those cases where we've got. Brother Colton, who has five wives, and we're sending him to England on a mission.
The wives
are
all
chicken. Yeah.
Get rid of him.
Yeah. He's gone. Okay. Yeah.
I understand why that was a good idea. It worked.
Yeah. Kind of expedient.
It almost could become a class thing. My Mormon blood is bluer than your Mormon blood.
Absolutely.
That sort of thing.
Mine became prophet. Yours didn't.
I noticed that a little bit when I first joined the church. Just a little,
in our church?
Met, this was over 50 years ago.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody met it, but they were kind of closed in their thinking about their worth. Not everybody.
And who do I know? And who? Yeah.
And now our genealogy and our ceiling is based on love.
It is. It is.
For our ancestors and searching them out. And you feel you're just as proud as your great-great-grandfather.
Yeah.
Somebody is.
And an understanding that in the next life they'll accept the gospel. Just because they didn't accept it in this life, they will accept it in the gospel. And so even if they weren't very good people, you're going to be taught the gospel, they're going to be baptized and receive their endowment, and you'll be proud to be sealed to them.
I have learned that you don't make judgments on people beyond the veil.
Absolutely. Don't do it in this life.
You know, you're so thrilled when you find your third great grandfather. He might have been a stinker.
Might have been.
But you're thrilled that you can get all the sealing there. So it's based on love.
You do have to have a certain amount of testimony and trust when you do your genealogy, right? Yeah. Okay, yeah. Jenny?
So, I mean, you probably already talked about this, but my wife did also, so Jesus didn't want me to come last week. But, so...
Can happen, yes.
I said it just didn't go. So, I don't sleep at night, so that's fine. So, MCO, you know,
yeah.
When Jesus is walking down,
yeah,
hugging people, and I these people, so I knew that Mr. Condi was sitting there with their son, linking hands with Jesus.
Wow.
Okay?
Wow.
So it's just,
very cool moment.
Oh, my goodness.
That was very cool.
I had no idea. I really was skeptical. Tom and I were like, we're not going to do this season. It's an oratorio.
Killer.
It was. Anyway, but that moment, and I'm thinking about this, and I know since I've taught polygamy and all this kind of thing, and if you look at it from a different perspective, and you look at these people trying to link,
yeah,
and seal, and then I can't always verbalize it because you know these things are hard to verbalize, but you're seeing Jesus and you're seeing the love and the connection to all of us.
Yeah.
I wanted to be sealed to everybody on that stage because I love everyone.
Yeah, there's a connection. These are my family. This is my tribe.
I get it. I get this temple thing. I get this thing. I get this thing of love. I get what we're all doing as we hug somebody we care for.
Yeah.
We are.
That's cool.
Doing the proxy of Jesus, hugging the people we care for. So suddenly polygamy, when my ancestor, his wife, they get another wife, she can't have kids, and they want to have a family, and they create a family. When Thomas E. comes across the plains, and, well, they collected the people from the Hancock, and it goes to Tobias, we were told it's to Tobias.
By the way, Arza was there.
Yeah,
he was
exactly.
Part of that
he
moment.
He had just gotten back in with the wagon train.
Yeah, he had.
Brigham Young said, go. So he got back in his wagon and out he
yeah,
went.
Yeah,
and he came across and he said, Brigham Young told me I've got to be a, you know, polygamous wife. And I saw this chick and she's not looking real good and maybe we should take her on. And she says, that's great, but that one too. That's how it was.
Or supposed to be.
Well,
that's how
it was with the ones that worked, which I come from.
Yeah, right. Initially, that's how it was supposed to work, and that's when it worked well.
So much,
there's a lot of times it didn't work well, but that's we hear those horror stories
and miss this. But we miss
absolutely.
The stories of what they were trying to accomplish.
That's right. I think that's well said.
And I know there's people that didn't do it right. Hello, I'm not perfect either. But.
Yeah, no, I think that's really well said because we do hear the horror stories without seeing when it worked well and. The law of consecration was kind of that way. Some did it well, and some really.
What they meant, what their effort.
What the reason, the purpose? Yeah.
Just really quickly, in what we read about the reestablishment of the religious society, Brigham Young, if I remember correctly, asked Eliza R. Snow to go out and reestablish.
He did. Yeah, we actually have her diaries and her records of. The stuff she did, which is some really interesting stuff. So anyway.
Question. The Mormon colonies.
Yeah.
Did they were all formed after the border between the United States and Mexico was formed up?
Hold on to that question, because when we talk about what happened with Edmund Tucker, when the church was disenfranchised because of polygamy,
right.
That's when we get Calgary and we get... Mexico.
So they
we got,
they fled to Canada and Mexico.
They did.
And they were crossing international borders.
They were.
In order to
get outside the United
and
States.
Maintain their family structures.
Yep. How you doing, guys? This again, I will say this, and thank you for hanging in here. Could we do this in gospel doctrine? Oh, heck no. I think this is a unique opportunity, and I'm always grateful for you guys saying, let's do this, let's walk through this, and let's peel back some things and have some unique opportunities to understand the gospel. So I'm always grateful for this opportunity. Any last comments before we call a day? Okay, thank you. I bear you my testimony that this church is evolving. That understanding and revelation is evolving, that the role of prophets and how they work is evolving. And as we understand that, we're able to look at the church of incredibly, incredible people that had warts and they had mistakes and they were trying and they were intent and they moved this gospel forward. And the church today and the way we do the temple has a lot of differences from the way it was done back then. But that's as knowledge and understanding grows. Joseph was trying to say that there will be continual eternal progression in knowledge and understanding and growth and intelligence. And we're here to bear testimony of that. And looking at our history gives us that witness.
Even Moses took his father-in-law's advice.
Yeah.
And changed
from what he was doing originally. That's a good point. So anyway, bearing my testimony that's true. And I leave that with you in Jesus' name. Cindy, could you ask a prayer? And thank you for joining us for another Monday morning class. Hope you enjoyed it. If you have any suggestions about future topics that we could discuss, or if you had any questions concerning something that you heard in the class, please drop us a note. We'd love to hear from you. As always, if you happen to be in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, please come in and join us on a Monday morning. We'd love to see you and identify who you are. If the podcast itself is resonating with you, go ahead and click subscribe so that Apple can figure out where we are. We'd love to hear from you. So again, thank you for coming. And we'll see you for another Monday morning class.